We'll call this meeting to order. And so the first thing we need to do is approve the agenda by way of consensus. So is everyone fine? Agenda? Great. All right. The minutes. Everyone's had time to review them. I did have one thing in the minutes. It's on page 3 of 5, I guess, Carol, and that is motion to remove policy ASDW CSR6 from the annual planning cycle. I would simply like it to say for October, because it does appear again in June. So it's just for October. Okay. I'm sure that was the motion, that was the intent at least. So
that's good.
That would be the only only thing I've noticed. Anything else for the minutes? Are we fine with the minutes? Great. Okay, approved by consensus. Business arising from the minutes. We had discussed the situation in Nackawick, and David, I'm just wondering if you can give an update on that.
Sure. The director of schools for the Woodstock Education Center, Jay Kolfitz, and the facilities manager, Philip Cliff, visited Nackawick High School, and they conducted this study in two parts, one with a map and sort of working through it, and then a second by actually doing a walkabout with the school. Spent some time with the school administration as well. And the purpose of the study is basically just to get a handle on how the space is being used at Woodstock, not Woodstock, at Nackawick High. And the reason we need to know how that space is being used is because the small wing at the end of Nackawick High with four classrooms, two up and two down, is so significantly damaged, a serious decision has to be made as to whether that that wing is torn down or whether it's repaired. So we have we put that study together. I actually worked on it a little bit more today to sort of put it to paper, because there was a question that came from the Nackawick folks on the sustainability site asking to see the study. Well, the study was actually a big picture of a map with a bunch of scratchings on it that we all understood, but it wasn't something that was really presentable. So I took some time today to try and summarize it, and just in the process of getting a tiny little bit of feedback, and then I'll post that, but just kind of outlines the use of the school. And to me, it's right there on the bubble. I guess it's all in a matter of interpretation of the use of rooms. Mark and Jay and Philip and Sean Tracy and I met with officials from the Department of Education to share our findings, and it was agreed that the department would make no decision until the end of our sustainability study. And I think that was very important to Mark, and that was agreed upon. They've stabilized the room so that it doesn't get worse, and then sometime in February, I suspect, a decision will be made as to what will happen.
Any questions on that? Good. So basically it means we're free to proceed with Nackawick as scheduled, and Nackawick, everyone's aware of Nackawick.
Yes.
Good.
So, Mr. Chair, then all options are on the board that were presented initially.
I think there were two options, and one of those had two subcategories. So one option is a 6-12 school at the high school, in which case we would need the repair done to the wing, if not more. And the second option would be a K to 8 school at the middle school, whether that's K to 8 with just NACWIC or K to 8 with NACWIC and Millville.
Good. Okay, great. So next on our agenda is the naming committees. And these are in regards to two schools.
Right. And as you know, as a part of Provincial Policy 409, the policy you know so well, there's also a section that talks about naming a school. And when we did the merger of the two Stanley schools and the merger of the two Bath schools, there is a requirement to officially name the resulting school. And there's a template for a naming committee, a committee of four people, one person named by the superintendent. And for Bath, that was Sean Tracy. And for Stanley, that was Gina Dunnett. One person named by the DEC. For Bath, that's Norma Shaw. And for Stanley, that's Kimberly Douglas. One person named by the minister. For Bath, that is Brian Kelly. And for Stanley, that is Sandra McKinnon. And then one person appointed by the DEC from the community. And tonight we just have to confirm who you would like to appoint from the community. And after that, we will map out a timetable to start the process of naming those two schools.
I would like to recommend that we name Nola Carr to the Stanley
committee. Okay, well, we'll get Norma's first, and then we'll second both. Okay, Norma?
What was the name, David?
Galen Drost.
Galen Drost.
Yes.
Okay. So we'll have someone move those names, Donald. Be appointed. And do we have
a. Willing to second.
You're just willing, not willing to move?
Move it.
Thank you, Donald. Terry seconds that those names be added to the committee. Good. Any questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Contrary? Okay. We got our committee. Our committees. Potato Harvest Enhancement Program Committee. Do we have a report on that, Sheila?
We're going to wait till January to report on that. That's for the minutes from last month. So.
Good. As far as under correspondence, we did send a letter to the minister asking that one of the professional days not yet assigned be dedicated to mental health. We have since learned, David, you can provide an update, that they are putting two more professional days back in the system, I believe. Is that official yet, or?
I don't think it's official yet, but
okay.
It's accurate.
Okay.
That doesn't make me making it official.
Okay. But we haven't heard whether they're going to make, we haven't heard anything about. Oh, there's no official news. I haven't heard any official news.
I haven't heard any official news as to whether the days will be returned.
And I haven't heard any. I haven't heard any news, official or otherwise.
And I haven't heard that either one of them had no official news and didn't know
whether it's going to be a mental health thing. All right. No, and I don't. I don't have any news, official or otherwise. Otherwise, I'd probably say by accident. Whether it will be mental health. So, anyway, but the letter was sent and it was received. And
it was well written, I read.
Yes, I thought we wrote a nice letter.
Very, very nice.
I thought we did, unofficially.
It was a good letter.
Good. So that takes care of correspondence. So, why don't, at this point, we'll turn it over to David again for his superintendent's reports.
So the first report is ASDW EL8, and it's on communication to council, and we report on it twice per year. I report on it twice per year, and basically it's a DEC policy that calls for me to keep you well informed, to have good communication. We communicate, I feel, very well. Electronically, of course, we have our DEC portal where all sorts of things are uploaded. Some improvements made this year in trying to ensure documentation is up. We say 4 to 7 days. It's supposed to be 7 days, but you've been lenient with me if I need the weekend to tidy up loose ends and get those reports posted to the DEC portal. I know that some of you like to read a few days in advance of the meeting. Of course, email, you probably open your computer every day and see an email or two from me. Electronically, though, that seems to be our main way of keeping in touch. As per the policy, I do my best to provide you with a heads up if there's something that's brewing out there that's going to become quite public, either through the media or otherwise, so that you're never caught off guard, and likewise try and keep you in the loop with relevant trends and facts and information, whether that's in a working session or in public DEC meetings, or I know in the past we've had occasional conference calls as well. We've worked out a pretty good system, I think, now, and I guess this is the fourth of our 4 years together, and we've got a good system where you as counselors understand the communication parameters with the council as a whole and with individual counselors, and rarely, if ever, have we ever had an awkward moment where communication was offside or inappropriate. I continue to welcome your individual questions and individuals communications, phone calls, emails, and then when it's time for everyone to be in the loop, I know that we're all in agreement when that should happen. When we look ahead, we continue to try and tweak our reports, my reports, my monitoring reports, and I continue to welcome your feedback. As I look at this policy, I wonder if it's something that needs to be reported on twice per year. Maybe once per year is sufficient, but I can leave that with you to ponder over, or the policy committee to give some thoughts to as well. When it comes to challenges, again, the challenges of monthly reports, it's obviously my goal to make sure that I provide you with a report that's meeting your needs as a council. And you hear different things from around the province of how superintendents create reports and how they report publicly at meetings such as this. And I know that Mark and David went to a conference, and there may be some recommendations coming from that on my responsibilities as a superintendent in reporting under the policy governance model. I can tell you that with the size of Anglophone West, there's quite potentially a lot of news to share. So you do hear from me quite regularly if there's going to be something on the radio or in the newspaper or something that's going to catch the attention of the public. As mentioned before, I'd like for you to have that attention as well. And I think it's worth sharing that one of the challenges this year as it comes to communication is we have a great number of meetings, and I know that's challenging for you as volunteers and for staff to ensure that we're prepared. I think we're doing very well at getting through the meetings, and our big test is coming up in the next 3 weeks as we have spend quite a bit of time together in the next round of sustainability studies. But it's there nonetheless. So I think to address those challenges, we look forward to hearing from Mark and David, whether it's formally or informally. And I'll continue doing my best to ensure that that I keep you in the loop and that you feel comfortable in reaching out to me as necessary with your questions and comments. just one appendix to this, and that's a document that you see just about every meeting, and that's a key communication tool. That's the annual planning cycle that is right there on my bulletin board and keeps me grounded in the work that I have to do in preparation for keeping you up to speed throughout the year.
Any questions on that report? I just want to say we are waiting for kind of a working session for David and I to talk a little bit about. It's more mechanics, so we're limited to that. But I think there's some things we can implement probably with the new deck. Anyway, I'll share with you and we'll talk about it a bit. But there's definitely some good things come out of Halifax. And monitoring and reporting that I personally think that everyone would enjoy. Or it would make the reporting process more enjoyable was probably the correct wording. More efficient, which I think is enjoyable. So looking forward to sharing that information. So. Good. That's it. All right. Thank you, David. Next report.
Next report is ER2. And perhaps I'll start and then bring on a few experts as well to help in sharing the news. And ER2 is our report on academic excellence, and had significant support from Diane Kay and Gina Dunnett, who are both here tonight and very eager to present to you. I've asked Diane if she'd take a few minutes to pull the district improvement plan up on the screen and just she won't read it word for word, but she'll point out a few of the key goals and actions. And then I've asked Gina if she might take the lead in presenting the results from the Provincial Achievement Assessment from 2014-15. But of course, if we look at the policy, you can see there are some expectations. Your focus as a council is listed. Literacy, numeracy, science, critical thinking skills, promotion of teaching excellence, of course, which involves professional development and extending student learning. You've heard me say it before, we have a terrific staff, some wonderful educational leaders, directors and subject coordinators, data and accountability supervisor and teacher leads. We have 30 curriculum leads this year. We continue to work on our district improvement plan. It is, it's a living document, one that is called up on the computer screen quite often, and in fact, there's actually a committee that's been established this year, a committee of educational leaders, that has a regular meeting throughout the year to monitor the plan and to tweak the goals and to examine what's being done in really been impressed by the work of this particular group. Professional learning on the part of teachers. We're building some great partnerships with the University of New Brunswick, the New Brunswick Teachers Association, the Department of Education, Early Childhood Development, always seizing those opportunities to try and bring in experts from the field, people like Ann Davies, Sandra Herbst. Even within UMB, there are some experts that we can target, and I think in particular of a principals leadership program that we're running, and I've spoke to you about earlier this year. We've completed our balanced assessment framework document, and a copy is there available for you to have a look at. When we have our we communicate regularly, we share, whether it's through a portal or through newsletters, and of course through visits to schools to work with teachers and to try and help them as we continue to try and develop the best professionals that we can. When we have our principals and vice principals meeting, we always try and have that balance of business with professional learning. That's critical, and it's what the principals and vice principals want as well. They don't want to just sit there and listen to me give them a bunch of facts and things that they need to do. So it's worked out quite well. You've heard already that there's that the provincial assessment program has been remodeled. It aligns more with the national and international assessment schedule with PISA and PCAP. And in actual fact, I'm a part of the Ministerial Advisory Committee for Teaching and Evaluation. I had a meeting earlier this week, so I'm able to keep up with the events that are happening across the province. You know all too well about our work with report cards. Last year, we piloted a new K-8 report card, gave many opportunities for feedback, and we heard back from teachers, and we heard back from parents, and took that feedback to improve our report cards for this year, and that's been a very good, it's been very well led by Diane. The biggest thing, of course, has been the movement from 4 to 3, and they're all achievement reports as opposed to a mix of progress and achievement reports. And then some tinkering with the scales that we use to report. Remember that if you ever want to check out any of the schools, they're all available online, you can call it up and check on any school. As I look ahead, we as a senior admin team will continue to support staff growth through our leaders, through the teachers. We continue to look for quality professional learning opportunities. We want for our teachers and our leaders to be the best and to have new ideas and improve what they're doing in the classroom to offer the best for our students. I can tell you when it comes to people getting out and about, there have been 685 face-to-face school visits for either check-in, a little bit of firefighting, which happens in the world of education, or what we call rich work, like really digging into what we're doing as instructional leaders and in the classroom. And then there's been an additional 899 virtual contacts, emails, link calls, those types of things. So our coordinator and director and supervisor team are really working hard to ensure they're out and about. I mentioned already our committee that's monitoring. There are challenges. We have less leads. We've talked about that already. We would love to have more leads in the area of literacy and numeracy and physical education in particular. And it also takes some time to move an organization this size forward. Carol can tell you about the time it takes to move a cruise ship around, or you know, we're a big ship and it's taking some time, but I think we're on the right path. And of course, there's some money that's tied to it as well. Any time that you take a teacher out of the classroom, it costs $224 to replace that teacher. So we have to be creative in how we offer those professional learning opportunities. We have been, in addressing that challenge, we've been looking at trying to build relationships and partner with other groups to ensure that we have some opportunities. When we come to our leads, you know, those leads that were with us last year and aren't with us now this year, the bright part of that is that they're actually in the classroom having direct impact on a core group of kids, which is really, I think, quite beneficial to those students. That's just a quick snapshot from the main part of the report. There's two things now that I'd like to point out I think are important. I'll ask Diane Kay if she might come forward to call up the district improvement plan. Remember, it's available on our portal, or it's available to the public on our website as well. Whenever it's on this, I can't see. How does that work? Oh, here we go. So if you ever want to...
Can we ask some questions?
Oh, yes.
What you
oh, sure. Do you want to do that first?
Sure.
Okay.
How are these leads spread around now? How many were reassigned from the office to two schools?
Diane will know the exact numbers. We went from...
Last year we had 82 leads, and that served both the curriculum and the support services. This year we have a total of 40,
right.
30 of which are on the curriculum side. On the curriculum side, the subject coordinators have looked at a variety of means on where the leads and the support would best be. So, for example, in literacy, we have 15 leads, and we're targeting the K-2 area. Numeracy, we have 4 leads, and we're looking at grades 4 to 6, but with some attention given depending on which schools the leads are in. So, for example, if it's a K-8 school, that school they would span beyond the 4 to 6. So we've had to make decisions on where they go. Part of the decision making is looking at supporting teachers that are new to the discipline, new to the profession, and new to a grade level. So those are some of the primary areas that we're looking at supporting initially early in the school year. And then also looking at the data and supporting schools where we know that we need some support.
So the ones that have been reassigned then to schools, just by collective agreement, they might have certain schools. Is there some schools that have sort of an overabundance of these leads in them?
No. Some leads opted to go back to a school, so it would depend on the school that they had worked in previously. So if I was a teacher at Liscarman and I was a lead for a couple of years, then I would return back to that school. Other leads were on leave from an education center in a school within that center, and depending on where the openings were, they went back to that. And typically they went back to a school that was very close to the community where they had worked previously, or the school that they had previously worked at. So
we use 2 years as that general. We have the discretion to grant a leave from your teaching assignment and from your school. And traditionally we say 2 years. And then if someone stays beyond 2 years, we would normally say, okay, yes, you can continue to stay, but now you're going to be on leave from the center as opposed to the school, rather than keeping a spot in the same school for forever and ever, amen. And also, because this was difficult last spring, when we worked with those leads, we staffed them very early in the process so that we could help them return to a position, one, that they were entitled to if they were from a school, or two, that they really hoped to be in if they were from the center.
In terms of report cards now this year, things rolled up pretty good. Are teachers relatively happy with the new report card, or are you getting feedback?
Getting some feedback. We still have some schools. We gave a window where the schools could hand out the report cards K-8. So it was a 2-week window. Some schools had a practice where they preferred to give the report cards out prior to parent-teacher interview. Other schools like the practice of having parent-teacher interview and then giving the report card. So we created a 2-week opportunity from mid-November to the 30th of November. Most of the report cards have gone out this week or last week. And I was saying to Gina on the drive, you know, getting some feedback from the schools, from parents. They feel that they were listened to, that there were changes made from the pilot year to our implementation year. They're pleased with the changes in the scale, that we've gone to 3 achievement reports, that the progress is now more ongoing and at the school level. We're still receiving a few, you know, questions or concerns. We still have a few little glitches that we had to address with respect to the technology. One of the big changes was in the comment section on the report cards. So for the achievement reports, and this is consistent for all three, the language arts and numeracy sections, there's a 1,000 character box for comments on the part of the teacher. The other subject areas have a 350 character box. The size of the box is reflective close to the instructional minute. So because language arts and numeracy are content areas that have, you know, quite a significant instructional amount of time, they were given a larger box for comments, and some of the others are smaller. So teachers are adjusting to creating comments that are meaningful for parents and being able to write, you know, good comments within the parameters that they have. We've provided some professional learning. We created a resource, which I shared at the last DEC meeting. So we still have some professional learning and ongoing work to do with our teachers. But that was one area where we've received some feedback that, you know, we still need some work on that area. But I have to say the feedback that I've received to date, majority of it has been quite positive. We had a parent session on Tuesday night with Ann Davies, who is working with our educators this week in the district. We had 38 parents come out to the session on Tuesday night, and it was a very positive session. It was talking about the changes in assessment, and the parents were very appreciative to hear from an individual who has 30 years experience in the area of assessment and national recognition and international recognition, talking about, you know, assessment isn't just changing in New Brunswick. These are assessment practices that are changing around the world. There's no perfect report card, but the report card is one tool and one source of communication, and the real purpose is to try to communicate how children are learning. So she was very favorable in terms of the direction we're going, and the parents that were there in attendance, many of them had been part of focus groups actually last year, and they commented as well that they were pleased with the changes that had been made from the pilot year to now the implementation year.
Is there a record of the number of pull-out days for teachers for professional development that they should be in front of a classroom? Would that data be available? Because I know back in the days when I was last educating in the classroom or in the school, it seemed to me that almost every week there were two or three teachers being called out of the classroom to go to professional development sessions. Say it's costly, and also it's really not good for the school because supply teachers certainly don't replace the teacher that the kids are used to.
Sorry, to comment.
Sure, go ahead.
Just to comment on that, the format for professional learning, I think we've progressed a lot. So for example, tonight in Fredericton when I left, it was a dinner meeting. So a lot of the professional learning now is you know, a dinner session or a book study. We have our literacy leads that are doing what we call selfie talks and chats, and that's through Twitter, and they do those in the evenings, and it's every Wednesday night. So our subject coordinator team have been very innovative, very creative. There are some designated professional learning days, and a lot of work happened in the August, early September, which were full days, and then there was October 8th and 9th. There is some day pull out, and we do that, but that certainly wouldn't be the majority. A lot of it is after school. It would be on Wednesday afternoons or Fridays evenings. For French proficiency professional learning, we've done three Saturdays in a row where teachers have come on three Saturdays and have given up their Saturdays to increase their proficiency and working with writing and enhancing their skill set that way. So we are doing a lot of evenings, Saturdays, or a combination. So the leadership program that David alluded to, it's one Friday, one Saturday. So it's a combination. So there was a Friday session. Next week it's on a Saturday, and teachers are giving of their time. So
it's a lot less done.
It really is, and we've tried to be very creative. I did sessions this morning with subject coordinators, no travel. We did 4 one-hour sessions, and we did them all through computer and on link. And so even not just with teachers, but at the subject coordinator and district level, we're engaging in a lot more technology and trying to do that as well.
Very good. Thanks, Don. Anyone else? Okay. Continue.
Okay.
You want to control this stuff, or you want me to?
No, we can tag team.
Okay.
That's okay.
That's good.
So the district improvement plan, we shared this with you last year, and it was a 3-year plan, 2014 to 2017, and we had identified 3 priorities within this time frame. The first priority is a focus on assessment. The second one was on positive learning and working environments, and the third one was looking at shared leadership capacity. And as part of the first year with this, we engaged you as well in the development and in the identifying the goals and the priorities for that. You'll see on the right-hand side of that the new mission, vision, and core values, which David unveiled as part of the district this year. So we've embedded that into our district improvement plan. As a 3-year plan, we do monitor it on a regular basis, and we will be including those aspects or new pieces of information. So that was one example. On the page 4, which is on the screen right now, with our first priority, the goal and the focus for this year is to improve formative assessment practices. And the way we identified our 3 goals for this year is we engaged our subject coordinators and other members of our district team. We looked at data, and we had several meetings in the spring up until August to create the goals moving forward. So looking at formative assessment, and you'll see with each goal, we've defined what that is. So formative assessment, the process of both the learners and the teachers being engaged in seeking and interpreting evidence about their learning. So one of the key things that we know and what the research tells us is that if we really focus on good formative assessment, and when we say that, it's that quick feedback to help the learner and to help the teacher adjust instruction and for them to know where they are with respect to their learning. So that's been a primary focus for us, and that's our first goal for this year. With each of the goals, we have some data on the far left, and then as a little bit more challenging to see here, but then as the page moves to the right, what are our indicators of success? What are some of our strategies and actions? And we asked each of our subject coordinators and as directors as well, when we create our work plans have to directly relate to the goals that are within the district plan. There's a column for monitoring and accountability. So as you'll see, the work plan, so all the projects, initiatives, professional learning, how does that in each individual's plan support formative assessment? School improvement plans, Gina and the directors of schools, and the rest of our team as well, look at the school-based plans, support the schools with their actions, and ensuring that they do reflect formative assessment as well. And you'll see the third one there is a monitoring committee. This is a new component that we added this year to our DIP and PLEP. The committee is comprised, we have 3 directors. Jay at the back has been our representative as the director of schools. Catherine, the director of education support services. Myself, we have Gina, and we have 3 subject coordinators represented. We are meeting 6 times throughout the year. And then what we do is we follow up with our large subject coordinator team as well. So when David was talking about the data and are we in schools and what does our work look like, We did have our group meet as an entire team, and we looked at all 70 schools, and that's where we comprised this data. So we looked at the work that all of our coordinators are doing, when they go to schools, the nature of that, and we've compiled that, and we're going to keep monitoring that. Is the type of work a check-in? Are we focused on our goals? Do we need to make adjustments to that? How effective are we with that work? And what does it look like when we are in the schools? Who are we working with? So are we working with an administrator? Are we in classrooms? Are we working with small groups of teachers? Are we doing embedded professional learning? And we're having those conversations, and we're sharing those practices amongst ourselves so that we can collaborate better and look at that work that we are doing. So that's just a little bit around goal one, which is the formative assessment piece. Goal two links to priority two, and we want to enhance the teaching and learning environment to promote student engagement. So again, the format is very similar. We're looking at those practices. We have the data, and the data is kind of that overall snapshot. Are the strategies and actions that were implemented, are they reflective in the data and those snapshots or big pieces that we see? Again, the monitoring and accountability, we're looking at plans. We're staying very focused. We're looking at our response to intervention piece. And so the question that went back to our leads, they're very much looking at data within schools. And how can we respond to the needs within the school? Do we put the types of interventions in place to support our students? Also with that engagement piece, there's a number of initiatives underway in our schools, because if students are engaged and excited about learning, they want to be there. So just as an example, I pulled out tomorrow, for example, we have 20 schools that are going to be represented at WE Day. And to be able to go to WE Day, you have to perform an act, you have to be a global citizen, you have to be doing something within your community. And the fact that we have 20 schools that are going to be represented to go to an Atlantic Canada assembly of students and celebrating the good work that they've done, I think is a testament to our schools and the work that they're doing to engage students within their school and within their school communities. And that's the group that are going. We don't have a lot of elementary students going because of their ages, but we had elementary schools that would have qualified to be able to be part of that celebration. So that's an example of some of the work that we're supporting and promoting. We have projects underway with makerspace labs. And engaging our students in inquiry-based science learning and creating and being active learners and getting excited. And I would welcome you to visit some of our schools. And we have three schools that have makerspace labs right now. There's a staff person that's working in seconded and going out to schools and helping to engage our teachers in that everyday practice and exciting kids about learning and what they can do and making those connections and reading and writing about it as well. So that just gives a little bit of an example about that student engagement piece. The last one is to enhance the teaching and learning environment and looking at shared leadership capacity. And again, our staff are working. How do we build the skill set within our schools? We know we have fewer leads we have fewer subject coordinators, but can we create champions and lead teachers within our schools? So a lot of the work that's happening is really looking at the capacity within our schools and helping to support those teachers and build their skill set, looking at those collaborative working relationships that can happen. Some of our schools are being very innovative and doing teaming work and opening their classrooms and teachers going in each other's room and sharing those best practices. So those are just some of the types of things that are happening to help enhance that. So those are our three priorities for the DIP. and very quickly identifying some of the actions to that. There are also, within our district improvement plan, and on page 12, the positive learning environment plan, and there are two goals, again, related to that. So with the positive learning plan, schools will enhance the positive learning to increase student connectedness. And again, how can we have kids feel happy, want to be in school and part of their school system? And the second goal is shared decision making. And again, it kind of relates back to our DIP goal about building that capacity, but not having just one individual take the lead, but really building those core leadership teams and having people work together and problem solving and working in a more collaborative nature.
Any questions on that part?
It's certainly nice to see them focusing on the wellness survey and the telephony, because I know each time you're going to school and maybe the PSSC is looking at that information, it's sort of overwhelming. You just sort of wonder how it's all going to come together. But obviously, it's part of the DIP and being focused on it.
But we're finding a lot of times that that school systems are data rich, but don't always use the data to the best of our capability. So we've got an excellent team. I can't state that strong enough. An excellent team that takes a look at that data and does what they're supposed to do, uses the data to help inform decisions and direct initiatives and make plans based on feedback.
That sort of forces the school to really take a hard look at their data too.
Sure.
I'd like to comment about the staff on the format that they've set up in boxes, bullet form. It's easy to see rather than long paragraphs. It's very easy. It's very clear. It's a really good setup.
Thank you.
Great. David?
Okay. Do you want to see how we did? Thank you, Diane. Let's call up Gina, the next contestant.
Come on down.
So I have somewhere here a PowerPoint. Yes. So there are two things that have been prepared for you tonight. There's a PowerPoint that we'll use to help guide the discussion, but there's also what we're calling a takeaway document, and the information is the same, right, Gina? It's
pretty much. The takeaway is a little more specific to our district, but yeah, pretty much.
I will.
Okay. All right. So, it's that time again where provincial assessment results have been released. It was probably about a month ago, and it's a great opportunity to share how we're doing provincially, or how we're comparing provincially in our results. I want to start by saying, keep in mind, and I know I say this every time that I meet with you, that this is a snapshot of how we're doing. And when you think of balanced assessment, large scale is one of three pieces. The real work is what's happening in our classrooms. It's the formative piece that Diane talked about that we have as goal one in our district improvement plan. That's what's going to change these results. I'm happy to report that our results this year are on par with the rest of the province. We had a significant gain in our grade 8 math results. You remember last year, not so good. This year, much better. And I'm also happy to say that in each of the six assessments, we've had an increase in results, with exception to our grade 9 ELPA reading, which there was a slight decrease of about 1.9%, so nothing to worry about or keep ourselves awake over. So I'm just going to go through this fairly quickly. I'll talk a little bit about the takeaway at the end, and then I can take some questions. So these are the assessments that occurred this year. You know that we've been changing assessments, and David mentioned that in one of his reports. So in 2014-15, we had a grade 2 reading. grade 9 ELPA, reading and writing and so on. The purple is highlighted because those were either new or they were field tests. So when you see grade 6 FSL oral proficiency, that was a pilot assessment, and those results aren't being shared. First year pilot results are not shared because we have to make sure that the data is reliable and valid. So we won't be seeing any of those in tonight's presentation. Grade 6 in reading, math, and science, those results will be shared because we did have a field test last year, but they're not ready yet. The province is in the process of deciding the best format to share that matches the new assessment. And as you see, it's an assessment of reading, math, and science. So you will be getting those results, just not tonight. They'll be coming later. We have a meeting in a couple weeks where we're going to determine the best format for sharing. And field testing happened in grade 10 because our grade 10 students will be writing a math and science assessment this spring. Okay, so starting with grade 2 reading, the way that the format works of the slides is you will see provincial on the first page, and the second page will be specific to our district. So you can see that as a province, there was a slight dip, and the bottom graph will show the breakdown between below appropriate, appropriate, and strong achievement for the past 3 years. So provincially, we had a 76.9% result. This is the breakdown by districts, and if you look at the fourth bar to the right, you'll see Anglophone West, and you can see that from 2013, we had an 80.3, dropped in 2014, but happy to say that we came back up in 2015 to 77.3%, which is above the province. Grade 9 English Language Arts, as I mentioned earlier, we did drop as a district, but the province also dropped as well. There was a decrease of 2.1%, and 69.7% provincially attained the appropriate level, 8.6 were at the strong level. The next slide will show our ASDW results. And you can see that where we fall in line with the rest of the province. So we came in at 78.5%, which is slightly, as I said, lower than last year. But it is above 0.2% above the province this year.
One of the things in the other document that you look at, the strong achievement has been reducing over the last 4 years. It was 14.3 in 2011-12, 11.8 the next year, 12.9, and this year's down to 8.7. So, I mean, even though it looks good when you take the total picture against the province, but, you know, obviously we're not as strong, not as many strong students as we did in years gone by.
And
could you...
Do you want me to speak to that now, or do you want me to speak to it at the end? Okay, we'll talk about that at the end. This graph shows the breakdown between programs. So when you see early French immersion, late French immersion, English Prime, and Province, keeping in mind that English Prime, that represents about 63% of the students who wrote the ELPA. And the description on the side really says it all, that, you know, our French immersion kids continue to outperform English Prime. But as I said, keeping in mind the majority of our kids are in English Prime that are writing this assessment. As far as our grade 9 English Language Arts writing, as a province, we're continuing to to improve. We're coming in at 90.7%, with the bulk of those students falling in the appropriate achievement range, and 2.5% in the strong range. When you look at our district comparisons, Anglophone West, we're coming in at 91.1%, which is above the province, and right on par with the rest of the province as well. There's another slide that gives you the breakdown based on programming. And you can see that we're doing, because of the results in writing, our prime kids are doing better in writing than they are in reading, as are the other programs. Grade 8 math. Basically, across the province in the past 3 years, there's been little to no change in results. Keep in mind that this year's results, the 2014-15 results, which we're sharing tonight, are based on a sample. And the reason, as I've explained to you before, that we moved to a sample for this assessment is because this assessment is being phased out. And the grade 6 assessments, which you'll be receiving results on later in the year, will have math results. There will also be grade 10 math results, which we haven't had in the past. So there's two assessments that are going to be, that we'll be able to report on related to math that we weren't able to in the past. So based on the sample, which was a 20% sample, 57.7% of the students across the province achieved appropriate or strong level, keeping in mind that there's a 2.7% plus or minus. So it basically that means that could go either way in the results because of the sample processing.
When you take a look at that, it's pretty flat.
Yeah, we flatlined.
For a long time.
Yeah.
Why?
Can we save that one too?
Yep.
Okay. I'm keeping a bank of questions.
But nevertheless, in the sample, it was almost 8% more that scored the strong this year. So that's positive.
Yeah. I'll speak to that as well, because there was something that came out in the sample process that was very that was positive for us as a province. So when you look at our results in comparison to the rest of the province, we're back pretty close to where our other districts are falling. We've had a significant gain, as I said, from last year. So keeping in mind that, and something that you'll notice that alongside of each of the names of the districts, there's a bracket that says N equals, and then a number. So that represents the number of students who participated in the sample. So we had 494 of our grade 8 students across the district participating, which is 20%, which represents 20% of our students. There's a breakdown of programming, again, based on early French immersion, late, and English prime.
So it's very clear everyone needs to be in French immersion to get the scores up.
Make some smarter.
Yeah.
No, I wouldn't say that, but I thought it was important to share those results with what we're seeing and the discussions that are happening around French immersion. Okay, and finally, this year, there was a new, it wasn't a new assessment, but it was an assessment that became mandatory, and that was the grade 12 French second language oral proficiency assessment. And in the past, that was, students had an option to participate in that. And there's some guidelines as to who gets to participate in and who doesn't. And if you read the population section above, you'll see that it's for students enrolled in the early and late French immersion programs. And French immersion students are defined as those who adhere to policy 309, and they must have taken 25% of their courses in French in grade 11 and or grade 12. So to be considered in a French immersion program in grade 12, you know, in high school, and to be able to participate in this assessment, 25% of their courses had to be in French immersion. You'll see that the provincial target for this is 85%, and results show that 41.6% met or exceeded the advanced proficiency level, which is what the target is for early French immersion students in grade 12.
So, Jim, where does that relate to these levels we hear about in French, the five levels of French proficiency? Is there any parallel?
Well, I'm not sure if it's when you're talking about five levels, but these are the targets. So see at the bottom, there's basic, basic plus, intermediate. Is that what you mean? So those are the levels of proficiency that students could be performing at. So when they participate in the assessment based on how they do, they will land within that spectrum. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, so we're saying basic plus is level one.
Do we talk levels now, Diane, in French?
That's bonjour, je m'appelle Ron.
Well, actually, in your takeaway document, because I anticipated it might be a question, what does advanced mean? And so the criteria is there that outlines what an advanced level is. So it will describe what has to happen for a student to be able to receive that. And then you would just, I mean, I didn't include all of the descriptions, but there would be specific descriptions of things you'd be looking for.
So Diane would have the same five levels for English with it, would you?
As far as we don't have an oral proficiency
in English.
Well,
there's no oral proficiency levels for English.
No.
Maybe it should be.
And this isn't continuous data either, is it?
This is our first year of results as far, because it was, we've had the results in the past, but this is mandatory in that every student who was involved, who was in French immersion, was required to take this assessment. In the past, they had an option to.
So where does one have to fall in that continuum to get a government job?
I was going to ask the same question.
Superior.
No. What is it in reality? Is there a no? We don't
I'm
know.
Not sure. Okay.
No, I know that that in order to be a French immersion teacher within our system, you're supposed to have a superior level of proficiency, and in order to teach the grade 5 intensive French or post intensive French, you're supposed to have an advanced plus.
Advanced plus.
Advanced plus.
So we have three people that can qualify.
And when I say continuous data, like, it's not the 42.7 that are at intermediate, we don't know if they're this far away from advanced
or
if they're that
right.
far away from advanced.
I see, yeah.
Yeah.
We don't know how close they are, yeah.
So only those that were taking French immersion courses in grade 11 and 12 took this?
They had to have taken at least 25% of their courses in French
and
immersion.
Depending on the person who's assessing, too, I mean, they could fall very, you know, one might rate one as advanced and the other one advanced plus or vice versa.
Sheila?
I mean, I know there's a rumor.
It must be hard in some schools for the students to get 25% of those courses that they're not offered.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no... Like there's no line that we can draw for that, because I would be a very upset parent if my child went all through school in early immersion and then find out they wouldn't be considered immersion because they had to take a course that wasn't offered in English because they couldn't get it in French.
Diane may correct me if I'm wrong, but if it's a school that offers French immersion, then you have the opportunity to get the 25%.
Right.
Having said that, if you're someone who's pursuing engineering or science or nursing that has very specific courses beyond the graduation requirements, sometimes your timetable is mapped out for you and your choices are limited. If you want to, if you need to get your chemistries, your physics, your biologies, your maths, your graduation requirements, and your credits from French immersion, it's almost mapped right out for you. That's right. And so that's
well, that's where the problem is with French immersion. It's not out. It's late.
Yeah.
That's the problem with French immersion. It's not the entry point. It's the exit.
Yeah, exactly.
I just had a son go through high school, so I know. And OHS with lots of choices.
I also maintain it's not the problem with the French immersion program. It's the fact of life, if David said, that if people are going to make choices to go to English universities in sciences or engineering or math related, they're not going to take them off my set.
Well, they're not available in French, is the problem.
Well, let's say Queens or whatever university you want to pick. You don't really care what French, what language you speak. Can you pass their science proficiencies? That's looking for in transfer. And that isn't necessarily a bad thing, and we don't talk about that.
Sure.
We don't have to have 80% of our people up in advanced or where. Everybody still have a successful French immersion program.
But I was going to say, I think the positive information in that slide is that 42.7% of our students were at intermediate plus, which is, and like, as David said, we don't know how close they were to being advanced. So the bulk of our students are doing
they're functioning
well
in French,
French exactly. In our French immersion well. Program.
That's actually the goal.
Yeah.
And I'll add that in 2013, Sadie graduated from French immersion with some kind of certificate.
Mm-hmm.
And not once did she have to show the certificate when applying for a job. All they want to know is she can read and write it and
right.
demonstrate it.
Yeah.
Does she live in Fredericton?
She does live in Fredericton.
If you look at the next slide, did you already switch?
I just made the switch.
Okay.
So that was early.
So that was early. So now this is late. This is late. So our late French immersion program, target is 85% as in early French immersion. Same criteria follows and the results indicate that 56.2% met or exceeded the intermediate plus proficiency level. So students who are in the late proficiency or late French immersion, their target is intermediate plus or above. And you'll see the same, you know, we had 13.4% provincially in advanced, 42.8% in intermediate plus and 40.2% in intermediate, which says that again, our students are functioning in their French, you know, in French immersion and being able to communicate in French. So I think that's positive as well. Questions and comments, and also if you would like to look at individual school-based results, then you can certainly go to that website and you will see their school report card. That's created by the province, and also you can have a look at their Tell Them From Me reports, which I know some of you have been interested in those in the past as well.
Okay, so two questions. Why is the strong declining in some assessments, as Don noticed?
And Don, when you noticed that, you were speaking specifically to grade 9? Right, so in our takeaway report, I don't know if you have copies of that with you, or you can pull it up online.
It's right here.
Or David has it, okay.
That's this, right, Gina? Oh.
Historically, Don, we haven't, across the province, and we're in line with the province, we haven't had a large amount of students that are falling in the strong achievement. So when you look at just Anglophone West results on page 7 of this document, when you look specifically at strong, you know, in 2012-13 it was 2.5, 2.9 in 2013-14,
but a big gain in the appropriate level that year. And the reading,
right,
yeah. And then when you look at, I'm looking at the writing too. And that he's looking at reading. Then we're going to, reading. Sorry, I was giving stats on the writing, the next page. That's why David got thrown off.
Page 6.
So there is a slight decrease for sure in the strong appropriate, but that our strong achievement, but we're maintaining and with slight increases in the appropriate, which makes sense because we're losing in the strong area. As to why, we know that when you look at the ELPA, there are three types of three types of questions. Literal, inferential, and personal critical evaluative. And what our students provincially and in our district are scoring the less or the least in would be the inferential section of the questions and being able to infer why things happen the way that they happen. And that matches what's going on in the province as well. So as far as what could be a target to help us in those areas, to move more kids to strong, I would recommend that we look at how are we, what are our practices in our classrooms to support kids being able to answer those types of questions and to be able to think. And the other piece is that 60% of the assessment is made up of those types of questions.
So we need to be challenged, and that's one of your goals in this policy, is to be looking for ways to build critical thinking skills. And it's those critical thinking skills that are going to take kids over the hump of having appropriate achievement and strong achievement. Mm-hmm. So we need to be looking for classroom activities
mm-hmm.
and that are going to challenge kids to really, think outside of the box.
Mm-hmm.
And when we have activities like the turning point essays, Diana, I didn't use the right word there, turning points, I think it's called, and different activities like that, that are really extending opportunities for kids
mm-hmm.
to, I think that's where we'll see growth. But, I wish you could put,
I wish we
I'd
could
probably
say
be making
we did
more
this,
money
right.
if I could put my thumb on that and package and sell it,
yeah.
because...
It's
hard to
pinpoint. The place that's going to happen is in the schools. You either write it in your district improvement plan, but you've got to see that in the school improvement plan. And
yes.
The administrators
mm-hmm.
have got to start disaggregating the information to say,
mm-hmm.
hey, here's an area
yeah.
that we have to start focusing in.
Yeah.
And when they do their walk-arounds, or when they want to look at a teacher's lesson plan,
sure.
or whatever,
And we'll see kids performing at a strong level when they're coming from classrooms with teachers who are excited about kids and engaging them in off-the-wall type of activities as opposed to teachers who might just be teaching to the general core and who are, just teaching curriculum as opposed to teaching kids.
Mm-hmm.
And would each school have the same information for their school?
Yes.
So obviously then, if you look at the school information or the principal
mm-hmm.
has, obviously if those are even lower than what the district is, then that's a
do they have it at the classroom level too? Or it's not by class?
The grade 9 is by class because
it's
a graduate
requirement. That's right.
So yeah,
it's by class.
Yeah.
Elizabeth?
Looking at the grade 8 math and even consistently back from 2004 to 2015, it's still, the numbers are just mediocre and just low. You see the benchmark is 80, and yet still from 2004 to 2015, that's quite a chunk of time,
mm-hmm.
and it's still, there's no gains, there's no, what is going on with the math that we can't seem to, considering the type of technology and how much we strive in the type of what the kids have to learn as far as mathematics to go on, it's just like, what do you have to do to kind of get it?
And that follows, yeah, that.
Nothing as much as.
Yeah, and
like it's been consistent.
And we have flatlined in math across the province. When you look at our results in Anglophone West, and you look at the breakdown between below appropriate, and strong, you can see that we're doing quite well in our strong area. 23.5% of our kids who wrote this assessment came in the strong category, and 32.9 within the appropriate. So you can see the growth that's happened in our district throughout the year, throughout the past years. As far as why we flatlined as a province, and we followed along with that, there's a lot of things that are happening across the province to address that. There's special projects that are happening in Moncton, which we talked to you about last year. As far as the area that students struggle the most with, when we look at this snapshot, it would be in the number strand. And what a lot of schools are starting to do is do some backwards design and trying to figure out where are the gaps, what are the gaps that they can predict are going to occur at certain grade levels, and they're using that information to help them plan specific actions to support. So that's promising that schools are looking at that. They're not just saying, well, this is where it's at, and we're not going to get any better.
Is this something new, like a new strategy?
It's not a new strategy. It's just something we've been really, when I'm in schools and having discussions, we're talking about that. When we're doing school improvement planning, we're talking, and if we're looking specifically at math, if schools identify, well, we need to focus on numbers. Okay, well, what's the issues in the number strand? Because the number strand is huge. So you really have to break it down by outcomes. And one question that I ask teachers often is, what can you predict based on the grade level that you're teaching that students are going to struggle with? And 9 times out of 10, if not 10 times out of 10, teachers can tell me where the issue is going to be. That in kindergarten, it's counting backwards. Okay, so why? So then we start having those discussions. Why? What's happening in grade one? They can predict what the issue is going to be, and then our math leads, and I'm talking about a specific school that we're working with right now, and then the math lead is able to go in and help to bring all that together, because I'm not an expert in math, but it's really trying to drill down into where are kids struggling and what's the specific action that we're going to take. And I think that's how we will get better results, when we can identify the actions that we're taking to support.
Well, maybe these results are a reflection of better things happening before grade 8. I mean, you've got a stronger group. Maybe they are focusing more on numbers and it's starting to show.
And numeracy is so sequential.
And numeracy, yeah.
You build on the year before. Yeah. But these are the type. These results, you have to be happy about the fact that these are the best results we've had in the last 5 years. But you still have to have that lingering feeling, man. We need to get it out of the 50s. We gotta keep going up. So there's.
And those, and that's the mindset we need in schools, and that's what we need to be promoting with parents, is that we're always looking at ways to improve. But we need to take time to stop and celebrate where we're at, because we have had some, we have a lot of things to celebrate.
Ron?
Through you two, I'm pleased with what I hear you and Diane saying, and doing the teachers. And I think there's some really good things happening. But when I said the line looks flat, we were looking at the provincial results from way back from 04 up to now.
Yeah.
And it really hasn't improved a lot. Remember, we had a little chat, you and I, some others, and I just had read the Globe and Mail, and I asked the people and probably to do it now if we haven't asked, where are the top three provinces in Canada in math? And even people at the district office have guessed, with some people here, and they guessed Alberta, BC, and Ontario as the top provinces in Canada in math. And I said, no, you're wrong. The top province was Quebec.
Quebec.
It surprised me, and it surprised a lot of PISA scores. So has our promise done, if you're going to do something, it's like, you know, you soar with the eagles, has someone gone to Quebec from province, groups of people, and see, what are we doing differently? Because that isn't just that year. The green flat line, but Quebec has flatlined higher. And I think in our district, I hear really good things happening, but as a province, why aren't we doing something like what's happening in Quebec?
See their model.
There's something happening different in Quebec that's not happening here, because unless all the kids born in Quebec happen to have an innate, incredible ability in math, which I doubt is highly unlikely.
And it could be a combination of practices that are happening, but it could also have to do with the assessment. I'm not sure what their assessment structure looks like.
I know one of the practices. You know what it is, don't you? They drill their kids. They have them memorize facts at times. That's what they do in Quebec. That's one of the things they're doing different.
And
we don't do that here very much, do we? That's one of the things. That's the kind of thing I'm wondering, because for all 4 up to 15,
no,
there's not hardly any changes.
Just been, I remember an administrator at Minto one time, when new math was first coming out, you had to take, rather than just adding numbers up, you had to take and pull them all apart and understand all of them all apart. He says, it's like a light, he says. You put the switch on, the light comes on. You don't have to understand all the wiring of it.
Nope.
And that's what's happening in Quebec, I think. There's more of that basic learning and some memorizing of certain facts, and it doesn't hurt them. Ours is all...
It may not hurt them, but I challenge a little bit in the fact that kids need to understand why the answer is the answer. And I think that's really what we've been focusing on in our math, and that may be part of why we have flatlined a bit.
Why does a child need to know why, what the components are of 6 times 7? Like, why does a child need to know what the breakdown is?
Because there may be a time that I need to do something more advanced than that. And if all they've done is memorize what 6 times 7 is, then they don't have the capability of moving forward with an advanced problem.
Well, I disagree.
Well, it's similar to reading.
Maybe because you
teach phonics, you teach a psych method. The answer is you teach both.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. I think at times it's very important to break down groups of 4 and 6 and see if they make 10. You switch them around all by 4 and 6. It's like the little boy that came home and from school was dead, so I had to make a school day. He said, I don't know where I was. I said, I failed my math test. He said, what was on it? He said, well, the first one was 4 plus 6. He said, what did you put down? He said, I said, 10. That's good. What was the second question? It was 6 plus 4. And his father said, that's the same damn thing. He says, that's what I told the teacher. That's why I failed my math test. You know, so.
But you know, case in point, the power went out over not too long ago, and some students working at the store, they tried to operate the store for a while, and they couldn't make change. They had to have the bells and whistles. So that tells me that somewhere along the line, there's going to be some kind of, you know, understanding of some wrong things.
Oh,
what's wrong with us?
I think conceptual math.
Oh, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with you. I'm just saying that we need to focus on helping kids. I mean, that goes back to the struggle that we're finding in numbers strand, is that students aren't always able to show their understanding of why an answer is. Yeah, they need to know 6 plus 4 is 10, but in kindergarten, when they're working with numbers to 10, that's where a lot of the foundation is happening as to why. Why is 6 plus 4 10?
I just want to go on record. I understand that's not all the answers, memorizing facts. My cousin was doing math with their dad one time, and it was dealing with the oil bill at the time, and which when money was very different. And she got the answer that it was $240,000 for oil that year, because she had no idea whether that was sensible or not. So So we understand the number concept,
yes,
which is important.
And the challenge in classrooms is that teachers need to know where their students are at and how best they learn. And that leads us back to the whole, you know, our goal and our DIF around formative assessment. And a huge part of formative assessment is having learning targets based on where students are at and what their needs are that are linked specifically to the curriculum. So you may be able to learn math in one way, whereas Elizabeth may need a different way for me to teach her, and I have to be able to have the skill set to do that. When we have that happening in our classrooms, then we'll also see a change in our results, I believe.
But I mean, if you start in grade one, it's like a building block.
Right.
And an understanding. So you think by the time they get to grade eight, with all this intervention and understanding and building, that by grade eight, their marks would be, you know, going that much more further, mm-hmm, than, because after 11 years, it's just like it goes up, but there's no real significant change.
Well, we may not be seeing the change as quickly in our provincial results as we would like, but I believe that when schools are looking at their school-based results and they're looking at classroom results, so for example, from report cards or the assessment that they're collecting formatively, they're seeing changes in results, and they're informing their instruction based on what they're seeing. So I really do believe that within the next few years that we will see an increase. And I think you'll be pleased to see the results from grade six. That's going to be telling, because that's going to give us a quicker snapshot. We're not going to be waiting until grade eight. We had grade five, and then we didn't have anything until grade eight. So we're going to have something at grade four. We're going to have something, a snapshot of grade four, a snapshot of grade six, and then again in 10. So we're going to be able to monitor at that large scale piece more efficiently, I believe. And schools, I mean, Don mentioned earlier about schools needing to use their data. I'm here to tell you schools are really coming on board with using their data from my experience, and they're wanting to use it in a way that meets the needs of their kids.
Kimberly?
Is there any indication that the grade 10 assessment will be used as a part of the school mark?
I haven't heard that. I don't think that David's on the MACD committee. Have you?
No, I don't think so. Not a graduation requirement.
No discussion. I've always felt, and I didn't ever teach grade 8, but I've always felt that giving grade 8 kids a test to write that didn't mean anything probably was part of the problem.
But does this count?
Yeah.
My answer was everything always counted.
I just want to say, for the record, I was born in Quebec, so thanks, Ron, for that. Appreciate it.
Do you remember your results?
And how did you perform? I always enjoyed math. And we have an 8-year-old in grade 3, and we had one 10 years ago in grade 3, and it's totally different now. I love how they're teaching it. Like, 627 is not 627. It's 6 100s, it's 2 10s, and it's like, this is so easy. Now, someone closely related to me said, this doesn't make sense. I don't want to say who, but anyway, I thought it was a lot easier. So, no closer. Well, yeah, no, not as close. Through marriage.
As you're reading this at your own leisure, if you have questions, then you can certainly contact me, or if something you're wondering about, or an aha moment, let me know. Okay?
Okay, anything else on that, David? Is that the, yeah?
No, I think that's...
Any other questions on that report?
No.
Good. Thank you to everyone.
Thank you to Gina and Diane. And as I look at the agenda, I'm not sure if you want to stay for sustainability studies or policy governance or surplus buildings.
But you're welcome.
But I know it's a one-hour drive down the road, so
no.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Jane wants to leave too.
No, but you can start leaving until we have quorum and the rest have to stay. Sustainability studies update, David?
So I just wanted to let you know that our studies continue, and even though there's been a little bit of a lull in meetings, there hasn't been a lull in action. The you know, that we continue to build the reports, the big reports, that, and I felt so good when I finally got them done, because I know a lot of people were waiting for them, were those financial documents, so they're all up now. I try and monitor that discussion board. There's some great questions that come up a lot. I should ask Philip to be the one monitoring the discussion board, because they're mostly always facilities questions, and sometimes I know the answers, and sometimes I go to him, and sometimes I don't get there, and some of you might remind me, or a staff member might say, David, you better check the board, because there's something on there. So we try and keep up to speed. But of course, in the next 3 weeks, we go to public meeting number two. And I think our approach in the past has been that the deck chair welcomes everyone, and that presentation by presentation, they come up and they present to you and they present to the public. And I'll try and make sure the technology is available and that I collect their reports so that they can be posted. I can tell you that we've had some good feedback. So the deadlines have closed for Millville and for McAdam. And Millville sort of has a different approach in that I see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 entries, with one of them being the PSSC, and then a lot of little 5-10 minute stand up and share your thoughts. So a lot from citizens. The mayor and council, as well as the MLA, are there as well.
Actually 10, David.
Oh, it's
the
10.
One on the side can in
okay.
The last hour.
But that's a lot of 5 minute shots, right? And so we'll formalize that agenda and put it up. And then McAdam, it's sort of like one that's come in, but it's the full show. You know, they've organized themselves and they've shared it, so it's you know, an introduction, and then they're going to hit on all sorts of different categories. So there's like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 or 7 different people. Thank you. Drive carefully.
Carol, for that one, we do want an approximate time frame for each of those speakers under that one big category. Because
I want it broken down more.
Well, only because it's important for the sake of time, because we don't know, for example, the first one, introduction, which we know won't take long. But if they give a 30-minute introduction, we don't know if they're on schedule. So it helps us a general time of what each one, so that we make sure we've allotted enough time, and that if, you know, we don't stick to it strictly, but if some one of them goes over, you know, to respect the other presenters, mm-hmm. and we don't want to be there till 11 o'clock.
That's
so
fine. I can contact them.
Yeah.
I can make a note on it.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
So and then we'll have our four public meeting number two. My hope is that they'll present. I know we've seen in the past a strategy where it's been to try and poke holes, and I hope that's not the case, but it is what it is, and you as a council will listen to what they have to say, and I'll listen too. And then, of course, we'll have a little Christmas break, and you can spend some time on the sustainability sites over Christmas, do a little bit of reading, and then we have our Saturday session and a working meeting. And then, of course, in January, at the end of January, we have our final meeting. So,
and just, we've already gone over it, but just a clerical correction. It's Tuesday, December 15th. Not Thursday,
on the agenda.
And of course, those dates are on the website anyway. But
the dates, right? The days are right.
Correct.
The dates are right. Yep.
And that's because Carol was in on a cruise, and David did the agenda.
Yes.
That's right.
Is there any questions on the sustainability updates?
And we could tie that next agenda item there, Mark, in that confirming the location of public meeting number 3. We just said Fredericton, but we have confirmed that Fredericton High, the Tom Morrison Theater, is available. I know in the past you wanted, if it was going, we know that it'll have some public attention, and we know people will want to watch it, but I think you've said in the past you don't want to, you don't want to be the star of the show and try and presenting to the people. You want to focus on your meeting, and we can do that. It's just that we'd probably do that on a stage, and they'd just watch, and you'd go about your business.
Just,
we'd probably have some microphones and that type of thing.
I've never been in FHS, so is that easier too? Because I know it's a huge school and to navigate.
Oh, yes. You'd come to the district office, and we'd walk down together. Mm-hmm. Very close.
Terry can show you how to get
walked in. And what's that about?
That's for public meeting number 3. We'd have our full deck meeting there.
Yes.
So this is not going to be streamed.
We haven't made the same arrangements, no. And if it's something that you want, we can. We didn't think of it as much this year because all of the sites are sort of an hour and closer, and the turnout when I think of last year was. I guess Scholes Island was probably
the best,
maybe 40 or 50 in Scholes Island that night. We can, if that's what you like.
I would like it, but we, you know, it's obviously up to the deck. If there's a motion, a majority agree, we'll do it. If not, well, I'll continue to wish for it and go from there.
And McAdam's an hour away. Millville's a little less than an hour away, Nakwick's 40 minutes away, and Burton would be 30 minutes away.
As of right now, there's nothing, there's no,
And we could ask them if you want. You're going to meet with them in public.
That wouldn't be such a bad idea to you know.
And I think we decided we can do it another way.
The last time we did it quite professionally.
But there is another way. It's just whatever way we start these you don't want to do one sustainability study different than the other. Last time we used a professional service, so we kept it consistent for the two.
But this year,
it's a new batch. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily have to use that professional service. There are other ways, is there not?
I think so.
There is. The technician, Mike White, had said that we can get something from the internet, like a program, and we can use that much cheaper.
So it could be people sitting in their living rooms and watching it, really. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They wouldn't have to gather at the school, for instance.
Right.
As long as we don't have to be in a string for good television production.
I hear you loud and clear on that.
Our priority
you want to be
will
in
be
meeting.
The meeting. Yeah.
The meeting is the priority.
Something.
We can give Tara a front row seat, and then everyone else can just...
I like it for transparency, but, we are close, so, but we can ask them and go from there. We have time to decide, but, I'd sooner see it done.
Are you okay? Should we book Frederick and I?
Yeah.
Yes.
So, Carol, will you...
Yeah, it's already been taken care of.
Oh, good.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Policy governance conference update. I have to apologize. I missed that on the agenda. We had already talked about doing an update when David is present in a working session. So, we'll certainly inform Sheila so she can not miss that. So anyway, we can just skip that for now. But it was a very good conference, and it was basically a day of just working, very consistent working all the way through with. These people are very well versed in the governance model, so.
So you and David went?
Me and David and I, yeah.
David
went for 2 days. I went for the one advanced day. I've already talked to the other deck chairs and the deck manager, saying that this is something that should be done provincially. We would all. Pardon?
Can we pay for that?
Well, at the end, yeah. Now. The latest, Carol, did you get an email from Stacy?
No.
Okay, I'll have to remind her because it's going to, mine is going to come out of the provincial budget.
Oh, good. Okay,
yeah.
No, I haven't heard that.
That's nice.
Yeah, so that's nice because it's, well, the session, it was 500 per day plus mm-hmm. expenses, so which weren't that much, but I would like to see them contract at a provincial level. It'll be cheaper. It'd still be costly. But I think it would make every deck way more efficient. They've really mastered the policy governance. And I've been at it a long time, and they talked about a couple of things I never heard before. Not
oh,
that
really?
We just heard and are not good at, but I never heard before. Makes perfect
wow.
sense.
Yeah.
Did they mention where their next session will be held? Will it be here in the Maritimes?
How can you not appreciate good sarcasm? You just can't help
yeah.
yourself.
There'll be other opportunities.
But anyway, back to business.
Yeah. Will there be other sessions in the Maritimes? Or?
There's none currently booked, but they contract, yeah.
Okay.
And I walked into it, so I deserve that. I understand. Okay, so moving on. Surplus building.
Surplus building. So we're moving our way through. You had declared Woodstock Centennial surplus, and that's now gone, and Southern Carleton and Woodstock Middle, I think, at a recent meeting declared surplus. We have two left. We need to declare Coles Island and Bath Elementary as surplus schools unless the council has a use for them.
I don't. Anyone else? So we
before
need a motion.
Declare Bath surplus. How are things going there with the? I haven't heard nothing since.
No, I can tell you that's a great question. They, I've been to the school a couple of times, and they're all in the building, and it's all working well, and the building looks good. The minister and the MLA visited the building. Of course, you all remember that you voted Bath as your number one priority in the major capital construction, and that. That usually happens in the legislature, sometimes just before Christmas, sometimes early in January. So we'll be excited to hear what government decides. And of course, they use that quadruple bypass surgery method to to contribute to the decision-making process, I guess, is the way.
Triple bottom line.
I know that. It's working fine, but it's. I mean, there's less elbow room, isn't there? There's 200 kids. Is Jay? Jay's not there. There's I think about 200 kids. I'm trying to remember 180 to 200 kids. Jay, how many kids in the Bath K to 8 school now? Is it 180 to 200? 188. And you know every
you feel welcome when you go in.
Every room is in.
Yeah, everybody's happy.
Every room
yeah.
is in use. The
principals. The school's alive now.
It's alive.
The custodian Nora, the school, the floor is just it shines. And I was said to Nora the first day. She said, "Jay, there's too many kids here. I can't get everywhere." But she just wants it clean. But she said, "It's like you know, it's alive."
Yeah. Principal was rejuvenated at the beginning of the year.
Yeah.
You know the.
He's
tired. He's rejuvenated, right?
Yeah.
It's one of the best parts of our province in terms of the type of people, I think.
Yeah,
they're good people.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah. The I would say it's going well. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I would move to declare Bath.
And?
Surplus, just Bath.
Okay.
Just Bath.
We have a motion for Bath. Do we have a seconder? No? Do we have a seconder? I certainly respect the second that. Any questions on that motion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary,
aye.
Same sign. Do we
I
have?
Coles Island.
Okay. Do we have a seconder to declare Coles Island as Ron? Coles Island declared as surplus. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Contrary.
Okay.
Just
a question.
Good.
Oh. Like once the building becomes like surplus, it goes back to the. What's normally happens? Do they normally like tear them down?
Sure. It's been a variety of different things. It's on our books until March 31st. And then at that time, it becomes just general government property. If something were to happen prior to then, I'm sure they'd get in touch with us. We saw Woodstock Centennial be torn down. Southern Carleton and Woodstock Middle, there hasn't been any...
Nothing.
Although Woodstock Middle is still on our books, but Southern Carleton is no longer. If you look at Alexander Gibson in Marysville...
Brand new, huge development there.
So it must have been purchased then by... I don't know who owns it
still. I don't know who owns it either,
but it's being used.
But it's being used every day. There are classes for seniors in there.
Oh, really?
There are classes
it's,
for community.
Yes.
There are offices rented in there that people are running
just the
practices out of.
Yep,
using
the
gym
the
every
bill.
Day. They
yeah.
have fitness classes.
Wow.
They have,
there's a
they,
director
it is a community center.
Yes.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah.
Where's that thing?
Yeah.
Marysville?
No,
yeah.
I think that's wonderful.
Sure,
like that, though. Really.
Yeah. They've been on the news. They've been on the news.
Like a
they've been on the news.
Yeah. So the think, but it's hard because they don't have a massive population. Like
yeah.
the gym in Coles Island, example, could be the
fitness. There has been groups interested in Coles Island, including the fire station, fire group. They could use it for a while. But it depends on the community, and it, of course, it all goes through DTI.
But I think that's wonderful, like how they're utilizing that building,
that's
you know,
right.
and it, with the community involvement.
Yeah. And the other school was in the north side was taken over by a private school.
Oh, yes, the other school was purchased by a private school. That's
oh,
right.
Really?
Yeah, Devon.
South
Devon Elementary.
Yeah, but it's now the.
Was purchased from the province.
Yeah.
That's right.
They purchased it.
Christian Academy.
Oh, so it's a Christian school.
Yeah, and there's offices in there. They rent them.
No, they play basketball.
No?
They're not very Christian when they play basketball.
My.
Leave that right at the door, Andrew.
Okay. Any other questions? Okay, no? All right. Public comments? And we have no public. Closing comments? Thank you, everyone. Meeting dates, as you see, it's going to be a busy December. So, great. So at this point, we would have a motion to adjourn and to go into in camera. Hey, Jane, seconder. All right, all in favor?
Aye.
All right. So we'll take a 5-minute break and then come into in camera session.